The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
It's Boxing with Chris Mannix presented by FanDuel. The sports calendar is packed, and there's no better place to get into the action than with FanDuel. There are so many sports to bet on, like the NBA, college basketball, PGA Tour, and yes, boxing. Every Saturday, bet boxing with me. Doing well these last couple of weeks, so stick with me. The app is safe, secure, and easy to use. FanDuel has exclusive offers, boosts, and more all month long. When you win, you'll get paid fast. FanDuel has lots of ways to play, like the spread, money line, over-unders, team totals, player props, and so much more. Jump into the action at any time during the game with live betting. Combine multiple bets from the same game in a same-game parlay and try out Same Game Parlay Plus. So download the FanDuel app today to start making every moment more. 21 plus in select states. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with the Kansas City Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG. Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, or Virginia. 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit www.mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Welcome back to another Boxing with Chris Mannix. As always, you can listen to the show live on the AMP app. Just follow Chris Mannix on AMP.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back. Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. Great show for you this week. Sergio Mora is in studio. He joins me to talk about all the news of the week, including the Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis press tour that we just saw last week. Gabe Rosado, the former 160-pound title challenger, he's got another big fight this weekend against Zerto Ramirez. I sit down with him one-on-one at Wildcard Gym to talk about that fight. But first, one topic Sergio and I didn't get to was the formal announcement that came Tuesday that Canelo Alvarez is going to face John Ryder May 6th, Guadalajara, Mexico, DAZN pay-per-view. This was a fight that was anticipated for weeks, if not months. Ryder is the mandatory challenger for one version of Canelo's title. He is a matchroom fighter, which makes the fight pretty easy to make. He is also coming off a pretty impressive year. He beat Daniel Jacobs at the start of the year, and he finished the year beating Zach Parker. So those are two solid mid to high level wins for John Ryder going into this fight. His previous loss, by the way, was a close one against Callum Smith, a fight that many people thought he eked out. So Canelo, Ryder, we knew that was coming. What I want to say about this, though, is that this feels like the start of the next and probably final phase of Canelo Alvarez's career. We know he's had kind of three phases up until this point, or two really, with this being the third. He had the first phase when he was this young, redheaded Mexican fighter with a good fan base, great speed, excellent power, came to the U.S., signed with Golden Boy, was called the next Oscar, and worked his way up the ranks that way, got a fight against Floyd Mayweather, took it, lost. A lot of people thought he took that fight too soon, but made a lot of money because of it. That was phase one. Phase two was when he became the pound-for-pound king, when he beat Gennady Golovkin clean the second time they fought, when he fought the Arislandi Laras, the Miguel Cotos, the Sergey Kovalevs, the top-name fighters in all of boxing, when he became the undisputed champion with wins over Callum Smith and Caleb Plant and Billy Joe Saunders. That was peak Canelo the fighter. Now we're entering this phase of Canelo's career where we're going to see what he has and really see what he has left. Last year was not a great year for Canelo. Let's be real. He lost to Dimitri Bivol, and then he had a fight against Golovkin that was, I don't know, lackluster, maybe? That's probably the right word. Golovkin was 40 years old, but somehow, some way, in the second half of that fight, it was Golovkin making a surge and finding his way back into it. Now, you can potentially blame that on the hand injury that Canelo had. It was serious enough that he had to have surgery on it a month or so later, so take that into account. But going into this Ryder fight, we're not looking at a peak version of Canelo. And I think people are wondering, I'm wondering, what Canelo has left. How long can he be one of the best fighters in boxing? Can he get back to being called the number one fighter in all of boxing? I mean, he's not too old. Right now, the number one pound-for-pound guy on my list is Terrence Crawford. He's, what, 36 years old? So Canelo can get there, and he's going to have opportunities to face the kind of opponents that will put him there. Like Ryder, we know what Ryder is. He is a coming off injury, stay busy, fight in Mexico type of opponent. Not to say he doesn't have a chance to win. Ryder is a southpaw and he's difficult, but this is not the high level opponent that we're used to seeing Canelo face. But after Ryder, you're talking about potentially a rematch with Dimitri Bivol. Then you go into 2024 where David Benavidez could be waiting, where Edgar Berlanga could be waiting, where other fighters at 175 could be waiting. There are going to be big time, big fight opportunities for Canelo Alvarez. And I think for the first time in years, we're not really sure how those fights play out. Is Canelo going to return from what he went through in 2023 in the ring to the from the physical ailments he had outside the ring? Is he going to return the same fighter? That's the question I have going into this fight and going into this year. What version of Canelo Alvarez are we going to get in Canelo 3.0? 1.0, a lot of fun. 2.0, great. What are we going to get in Canelo Alvarez 3.0? That is a question that I have going into Canelo's 2023. All right, up next, Sergio Mora, the former junior middleweight champion, and then King Gabe Rosado. All right, Sergio Mora is here, finally, hour and 15 minutes late for the recording.
Boxing with Chris Mannix. You're coming up in the world, Mannix. You explain to your audience what we have behind us? Neon sign?
I've told you that I am building out this garage as a studio. So now, if you're watching on YouTube, and I encourage all of you to go to my YouTube page and check out some of the clips. There is a pretty sweet neon sign as the backdrop for this podcast. Boxing with Chris Mannix is coming up, baby. It's coming up.
It looks terrible, man. It looks like a strip club sign at a in East LA somewhere.
Is that necessary?
Look, pink. Well, you tried.
All right. I think it looks great, so I'm going to go with that. All right, Sergio Mora, former junior middleweight champion, DAZN broadcaster. Watch the Oscars, by the way. Did you catch any of that?
A little bit of it. I know The Whale won. Brendan Fraser won, right?
Brendan Fraser won.
Best actor.
Everything Everywhere cleaned up on everything else.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet.
Nobody's seen it. I saw it on the plane the other day. Thought it was great. It was weird.
I started watching The Whale 2 days ago. I got halfway in and it kind of depressed me a little bit, but I'll finish it.
I actually have been told that there's a pretty good chance that next year I get nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
For Creed.
Creed 3, yes. That was the word. It's the early Oscar buzz for 2023. Or 2024, I should say, because it's next year. All right, we're going to talk about a bunch of different things here. The Tim Zhu, Tony Harrison fight from this past weekend. We have the Tank Davis, Ryan Garcia press tour just wind down last week. We have a new opponent for Katie Taylor in women's boxing. Some news with Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. And you and I, Sergio, will be in Long Beach on Saturday on the call for Gilberto Ramirez against King Gabe Rosado. I want to talk about that fight. As well. Let's start with this past weekend. Tim Zhu, Tony Harrison. This was a fight that listeners of this show and gamblers like you will know that I thought Tony Harrison could win. And I thought he was going to win. Come fight night, he was plus 460 to win by decision. I looked at those odds and I'm like, man, I haven't seen enough from Tim Zhu to make me believe he can beat Tony Harrison by decision. Whereas Tony Harrison, even though he'd been off for about a year, his last fight against Sergio Garcia, he won 190. And Sergio Garcia had only lost to Sebastian Fundora. So I'm looking at this as being an upset special. Not so much. I mean, the scorecards were close. There were 77-75 at the time of the stoppage in the ninth round. But Tim Zhu looked to be in total control of this fight from start to finish. Looked like he took his game to another level. And this was a fight, Sergio, that he said he was going to stop in the ninth round. He did. He did stop him in the ninth round. Just an onslaught from Tim Zhu. What did you think of Zhu's performance?
I think it was a great performance by Zhu because not only did he do what he said he was going to do, but he did it against a former champion that was motivated. And it was a fight that I thought Harrison was going to pull off. So I'm with you on that upset. I can't get mad at that pick. Harrison is the goods. I mean, he has a win over Charlo. That's a big win right there. He's a former champion. He's tall. He's long. He's lean. He had the right... I think he won the first round, but that's the only round that I gave Harrison. You know, he had the right game plan. It just the pressure that Zhu applied is special. He reminded me of his dad a little bit. That right hand is laser lethal, man. They don't pull it back at all. And now that, you know, Zhu has some experience under his belt, you know, beating a former champion, that's big. His last fight against Geisha, that was an eye opener. So I think what he did on the big stage is a coming out party. It was a brilliant performance. He got the knockout, he got the win, and he's charismatic, man. When they put a mic under his mouth afterwards in the press, when they asked him, he said all the right things, man. He said all the right things. So he's charismatic, he has power, and he can perform on the big stage. A new star is born.
He had a game plan. He followed it perfectly. He landed 45% of his power shots in that fight. Incredible number. Tony Harrison, to me, looked like a guy that didn't trust his chin from the opening round. He had been
Something was wrong with him.
But Sergio, when you get knocked out in your three previous losses and you're going up against the guy you know you can crack, if you don't trust your chin, you're dead in the water. Like, and he didn't. He only threw a handful of right hands with any kind of purpose throughout the course of that fight. And if you're not going to let that right hand go, I know the scorecards were close, but you're not going to win a lot of fights just throwing the jab over and over. No matter how effective your jab is, you're going to have to let go of that right hand. He wouldn't do it. He wouldn't go to the body because that would have exposed himself. His corner, his brother, like in between every round was yelling, 1-2, just throw the right hand, and Tony wouldn't do it. I mean, Tony scoffed at the idea over the last couple of weeks that he didn't trust his chin. He said all the issues he had getting knocked out were because of conditioning. I didn't see that. I saw a guy that was really unsure of how his body would handle a shot to the head, so he kept himself out of harm's way as much as possible. I'd like to see Tony Harrison retire. I'd like to see him walk away. 32 years old. He could, I guess, move up in weight, no. But I don't see that chin holding up against 160-pounders that can punch harder than Tim Tszyu can.
Harrison's been knocked out in every loss. What is it? Four losses.
All losses, all knockouts.
That goes to show you that Harrison doesn't have a chin, and he doesn't has what it takes to get back to a championship. I mean, he was able to pick up a strap. He was able to get some big fights, but he doesn't have it no more. Some guys, you know, they call it a career at 32, some at 35. Some just can't cross that finish line. Tony Harrison had a good opportunity to even put up a good fight against an Australian fighter going all the way to Australia. Going the distance in a good fight, that would have been good. That would have been good for him. But no, he got stopped bad. And not only that, but the referee let him take a couple of extra punches, you know, not stopping it earlier or intervening. But yeah, man, I think I'm with you. Harrison, I just don't see him, no future going forward.
I know Harrison won the first round on most scorecards, but I watched that first round. I didn't see him moving much. I didn't see him letting the right hand go. I immediately thought, like, this is a bad bet. He's going to lose this fight at some point. He might last. He might win some rounds, but he's eventually going to get caught. Now, Tim Tszyu, he's now next in line to face Jermell Charlo. Jermell Charlo was in the Showtime studio, said he's ready for it. Did that win by Tszyu change your opinion at all about how a fight with Jermell Charlo would go?
Not yet. It made me open up my eyes to Tim Tszyu because I, you know, anytime you do that on the championship level, even though Harrison, you got to respect the fact that he's won a championship against a legitimate champion. He wasn't just a title holder, picked up a vacant strap. He beat a champion. So you got to respect him as a champion. Tim Tszyu knocked out a former champion, a hungry former champion. So do I think he competes with Charlo? Yes, I think he gives him a lot of issues because he has timing, he has accuracy, and he believes in his power. The power is real, and he's only going to get more confident. Charlo, he's been inactive, you know, one fight a year. That's not going to do it on the championship level. I think the momentum is going to be on Zeus' side, but I love the way Charlo fights when he's inactive. I mean, the Castaño fight proved it all. You know, he's only fought one time. He got a draw. And then after that, he came back and bounced back, knocked out Castaño. If they happen to fight Tszyu and Charlo, I think it'll go similar to the Castaño fight. And I think he'll end up stopping Tszyu the same way.
Well, Zoo's a lot bigger than Brian Castaño and punches harder than Brian Castaño.
One inch taller. And
I think he's more than an inch taller.
He's 5'8 and a half. 5'8 and a half, and Castaño's 5'7.
Well, I think Zoo's much more heavier handed though than Brian Castaño. Brian Castaño is he's a worker.
I don't know about that either.
We did the Teixeira fight with Castaño a couple of years ago. Castaño is relentless. I did my homework, man.
That's the reason I'm bringing up the similarities.
Okay.
The height is only 1 inch difference. The reach is only like I think it's 4 or 5 inches. But the power is going to be similar. Castaño has heavy hands, man.
And he wobbled Charlo
with a left hook, yeah. So he has heavy hands, applies steady pressure, and he has the amateur experience, and he has a professional experience, and he has the championship experience getting a draw with Lara. Now Tim Tszyu's heading in that direction. The Geisha fight, now with Harrison, he's getting that championship experience. So do I think he beats a Charlo? Not yet. I think one more fight on the top level, then we got a fight.
Yeah, well, he's going to go straight to Charlo. Charlo said he wants that fight this summer. Tim Tszyu said he wants that fight this summer, so we're going to get it. What would worry me as a supporter of Tim Tszyu would be Charlo is not going to hold that right hand back. Charlo's going to let that right hand go, and Tim Tszyu's going to have to find a good counter for that. He's going to have to punch with Charlo at times. That's going to be a difficult fight, but I do think that fight got a lot bigger because of what Tim Tszyu did against Tony Harrison.
It did, but let me talk about that right hand. I used to love watching Costa Tszyu fight. My trainer loved Costa Tszyu back when he was on a tearing everyone up. He would say, this is the only guy that could beat Oscar De La Hoya is Costa Tszyu, and it was because of that right hand. It's the timing of it is so perfect. I mean, they have that Russian, they're Australian, but they're Russian. I mean, they learned their ABCs of boxing from the Russian school of fighting. And not only they're powerful, but they rely on timing. They don't waste punches. They don't learn that amateur style of picking and pecking with speed. They want to hurt you. So Tim Tszyu, just like his father Kostya, they have a mean right hand and they don't let it go. It just takes one shot and it's so perfectly placed. Do you remember when Kostya Tszyu hit Zab Judah? Mm. It was one shot and you would think that he got hit by 10 or 12 different right hands. It was one right hand. Tim Tszyu has the exact same thing. Yeah, I could see it. And he switches it to the body shots, the uppercuts, obviously. I would love to see how Charlo reacts if he gets hit by a Tim Tszyu.
Oh, we're going to find out because those two are definitely going to meet at some point this summer. All right, let's talk about Tank Davis and Ryan Garcia, the two superstars, if you want to call them that, came together last week in New York and Los Angeles. They went face-to-face at back-to-back press tours. A little bit of gamesmanship, you know, by Tank Davis in the New York's press tour. He showed up 2 hours late, made Ryan Garcia wait around for him to show up there. I was told he was getting a haircut in New York while Ryan Garcia was waiting on the dais for Tank Davis to show up. But you see these two guys come face-to-face for the very first time. Did you learn anything from this press tour as we get ready for April 22nd?
No, not really. We know that Tank Davis is not going to be the one that carries the press conference with talking. You know, a lot's been
talked a lot during that face-to-face. That was pretty cool, both of them.
Well, yeah, but that's different. That's just, you know, he's being in his element now, and I was just talking about fighting. But when it comes to talking about the promotion, when it comes to answering questions of the press, this is where fighters like Tank Davis and a lot of great fighters, they're not good at carrying a promotion. That's what promoters are for. That's what everyone else is for. They do the talking inside the ring. Tank Davis has that. Now, Ryan Garcia, on the other hand, he carried the promotion like the A-side. Handsome kid, said all the right things, and he was witty, man. Witty. Anytime Tank Davis tried to come with some rah-rah and some tough guy stuff, you get a quick counter from Ryan Garcia. Repartee, is that what it's called?
Repartee.
Repartee. Sorry, Mr. Frenchman. Repartee. Double E. So, yeah, he came back quick with the wit. So, I love that. That shows not only is he fast with his hands and the counters, but he's not intimidated by Tank. So, all that hardcore stuff of Tank, all the power, the being late, the you know, carrying himself with the big stick, that's not gonna actually do nothing for Ryan Garcia. So, the two press conferences, I give them to Ryan Garcia. The things he said, the way he carried himself, the face-off, everything. It's 2-0 right now, Ryan Garcia, and you love to see it.
I scored it 1-1 because I thought he lost that first press conference because he was just kind of sitting there twiddling his thumbs for a while. Tank Davis rolls in and Ryan says something to the effect of, I'm professional, I was on time. I think Tank said like, yeah, you're punctual, that's what you do. I thought it was Tank Davis all the way in that first one, but I do think Ryan countered nicely in that second press conference. Tank kept saying, all you guys are left hook. Ryan's like, what else do I need?
Yeah,
you know, I love that.
I love that.
I don't need anything else against you.
I mean, De La Hoya, all he had was a jab and left hook. He made a Hall of Fame career out of it. Yeah. You never seen De La Hoya knock anyone out with right hands?
Do you think, let me ask you this. You have been in all the fighter meetings that Ryan Garcia has participated in over the last like 4 or 5 years. It feels like everybody that prepares to face Ryan Garcia doesn't fully believe in his power. They all think like, yeah, he's fast. Yeah, he's got some pop, but they don't really believe it.
Until
then they get in the ring with them.
Until they get hit.
It's like, holy shit, that kid throws fast. He hits hard. Like I don't know about you, but I started to get some of those vibes off Tank Davis. Like, yeah, he's fast. Yeah, he can hit, but it's nothing I haven't seen before. Like Ryan Garcia is going to be something Tank Davis hasn't seen before. Tank Davis is going to be something Ryan Garcia has not seen before, but I certainly hope for Tank's sake, he's not underestimating the speed and power of Ryan, because that speed and that power can knock out anybody at 140 pounds and down.
I don't think Tank Davis, I think he respects the power. I think he respects the ability of Ryan Garcia, because the proof is in the pudding. Look at the way he's knocking out guys. One punch knockouts. It's very hard, Chris Mannix, to knock out somebody with one punch. One punch. Ryan Garcia is doing it. Tank Davis is doing it. So these guys are knockout artists. Now, they have different type of power. That's all it is. The snappy speed power from Ryan Garcia, whether it's just the left hand or not. And with Tank Davis, they can come from any punch. And it's explosive power. It's that raw, natural, explosive power. It's just two different types of style of punching. With Ryan Garcia, yeah, he doesn't need to hit you clean to rock you. And with Tank Davis, he can hit you anywhere and hurt you. That's a different type of power. And Garcia is really good at fighting southpaws. Really good at fighting southpaws. He prefers fighting southpaws. Maybe it's because the left hand is closer to them when the southpaw comes in. Whatever it is, he's confident in his fighting southpaws. He is not intimidated by the power or the swag or the being, what do you call that? Not punctual. Being late. Being late to the party like Tank. It didn't faze him, man. I love the way the kid responded.
You make a good point about southpaws. Two of Ryan Garcia's last three opponents have been southpaws with Luke Campbell and Javier Fortuna. Mm-hmm. Joe Goosen says all the time, Ryan grew up fighting southpaws because his brother is a southpaw. So he does have a lot of experience to that end. I also thought it was interesting and to hear from Ryan Garcia and people around Ryan Garcia about the level of confidence they have in the right hand. We all know and see what he does with the left hand. You know, back in 2021, he had to take almost a year or more than a year off because he broke his right hand. He comes back against Manuel Tego. He doesn't fully trust it. He trusts it more a few months later against Javier Fortuna, but I think he's going to really trust it in this fight because he's going to have over a year, almost 2 years since he hurt it. So I'm curious to see what that right hand looks like in this fight against Gervonta Davis. One thing we learned about the details of this fight, there is not only a catch weight at 136.
Rehydration clause.
But there is a rehydration clause. So Ryan Garcia, at some point on the Saturday of the day of the fight, he cannot come in over 146 pounds. What do you think when you hear something like that?
It goes to show you that Tank is not just, he's smart behind his, he's taking a calculated risk.
He flexed.
A calculated risk, and he knows that he can't just give, he's doing what Floyd Mayweather did. Mayweather did the exact same thing on certain opponents.
I agree, flexed.
Anytime you have leverage, you use it. Yeah, you're not supposed to be using words like flex, man, because you're not cool enough. But yeah, he's flexing his muscle. He's flexing the A-side muscle. And Garcia is going along with it because he just wants the fight. And you got to respect that because it goes to show you that he's not all raw power Tank. He has a team behind him that says, look, we can knock this kid out no matter how much he weighs. But if we have the leverage, let's put it on him, man. Why not? That's business. That's a calculated risk. Anytime you can, as an A-side, put leverage on your opponent, you take it. It's there. You can't just be a tough guy and say, nah, let him have as much weight as you want. I'll still beat him. Yeah, it sounds cool, but it's not smart.
You know, I don't know what you thought about the weight that Ryan's at right now. He posted a picture on social media this week where it showed him at 146 right now. So that's pretty good. To be within 10 pounds of that limit more than a month out, that shows he's in pretty good shape in the moment.
No, great shape. And not only that, but here's another thing about why that weight stipulation is there. If Tank rehydrates, he gets thicker. He's not going to distribute that weight like Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia is going to be, you know, a lot taller than him, a lot longer than him, a lot leaner than him. So he can easily gain 15 pounds, and it's going to look good on him. It's going to work for him. It's not going to diminish his speed. Now, if Tank Davis goes and gains 15 pounds, you're going to see it in his cheeks. You're going to see it in his belly. He'll still be muscular, but it's going to be a little bit more fuller because he's a lot shorter. So it's just smart business by Tank, and you got to take your hat off him because, you know, a lot of tough guys that come from areas like Baltimore or anywhere where they're hood, they say, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to beat the shit out of this guy no matter how much he weighs, where he's at, or who he's wearing, or who's in his train. No. You know, we know that Tank, we know he's from the streets, but we also know that he's smart. And he has a hell of a team behind him. I love that stipulation.
Well, every A-side from Floyd to Canelo to now Tank Davis has used leverage when they've had it, right? Whether it's weight, any other stipulation, they've been able to insert stuff into the contract that works. Tank Davis, knowing he's the A-side for this fight, was able to do that as well. I just hope, Sergio, that Ryan Garcia has a nutritionist in his camp, whether it's the people from Perfecting Athletes who have done a great job over the years with a lot of the top ranked fighters, but somebody, because he shouldn't go into this thinking and do it on his own, because not only is it going to be difficult to get in a healthy way down to 136, but you've got to be healthy coming back up to 146 the next day. That requires some professional help there. And Ryan's got all the money in the world.
Not necessarily.
I don't know.
Not necessarily.
Wouldn't you, for a fight like this, want to bring in somebody like that?
No, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And not only that, but he's young enough, man. You start bringing too many people that aren't boxing specialists. They have their own expertise in losing weight or nutrition or in cooking meals.
But he's He's going down to a weight that he hasn't been at since January 2021.
He's young enough. His body can
handle it. That's going to be over 2 years since he's been at this weight.
His body can handle it because he's young enough. Anytime you have youth on your side, you can actually, you can do that to your body.
What's the harm, though, in bringing in a nutritionist or bringing in perfecting athletes?
There's no harm, but if it ain't broke, then why are you adding something that's not?
Because it's the biggest fight of your life?
Then why are you going to fix it? I mean, why are you going to change it?
Yeah, but you, Sergio, use your career as an example,
right? Got you there, leave it there.
You came up, you had probably just your trainer when you came up. By the time you won a world title, did you add to your team?
Yeah, because I had to drop down in weight. I went from being a career middleweight. No, but he was a lightweight already. Yeah, I was a career middleweight, and just for three fights, actually, I went to 154. My three biggest fights in my career were 154, and I needed a nutritionist. And I couldn't have done it without a nutritionist. I didn't know how to lose weight. I wasn't even 154 as an amateur, I fought at 156. So not only did I need the professional guidance, but I needed the confidence that I can do it. And I needed somebody there, someone professional, and it worked out for me.
Yeah, but if you could have afforded a nutritionist back in your early days, you probably would have done it.
Yeah, probably.
Like I was watching Caleb Plant, David Benavidez 24/7 or All Access, whatever it is. And Caleb Plant was at his house with a new nutritional team. People that have been in with him just the last couple of fights. Why? Because he can afford it now. Because he made $10 million against Canelo and another couple of million probably against
Durrell. It makes a difference when you can lose weight properly. And you know, fighters have this way of losing weight, but doing it the wrong way, the old school way. I used to lose more when I knew what I was doing and I got a nutritionist and a strength trainer. I started losing more weight eating more. And that's the secret, man. Not diminishing your body and dehydrating yourself. You got to drink more water. You got to eat more food, the right food, and at the right time. So it's all strict. It's all regimen. So yes, does it bring something to the table? Absolutely. But in the long run, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, man. Ryan Garcia hasn't had any problems with weight. Why start now? Just keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Let's talk about the big fight in women's boxing coming up on May 20th. No, we are not going to get Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano, part two. That fight was postponed because of an undisclosed injury to Amanda Serrano. But we are going to get a undisputed champion versus undisputed champion fight, this time at 140 pounds. Formally announced this week, Katie Taylor against Chantel Cameron, the 140-pound undisputed champion. Cameron coming off the biggest win of her career, a win over Jessica McCaskill. She won that fight by decision. It doesn't have the pizzazz, the sizzle of Serrano Taylor part two, but Sergio, this is a pretty good fight, Taylor against Cameron.
Absolutely. Cameron looked good against a very tough and strong fighter in McCaskill. She's has enough power. I mean, if you look at her record, she has enough power to hurt you, but she's good on her feet. She has good ring generalship. I watch her fight. She makes the right decision. She has a high fight IQ, and you got to give her credit for that, because against McCaskill, she did her thing against McCaskill. McCaskill likes to make it rough in there, and Cameron didn't allow her. Boxer, puncher, very, very good on her feet. I'm going to keep saying that. So anytime you have a fighter good on her feet, they're going to give another fighter that's good on her feet, like Katie Taylor, issues. Taylor, the first thing that I ever complimented on her when I watched her fight, you know, years ago, it was her footwork. Man, I was like, man, look at that footwork. Look at the combinations. And then she just got better and better and better. Cameron has the exact same thing. She has great footwork, but she has power to go with it. So it might not be more dangerous fight for Katie Taylor, but it's going to be more difficult because the footwork and the IQ will bring problems.
So you think it's a more difficult fight than Amanda Serrano?
I'm going to go on a limb here. It's going to be equally as equally as difficult. Yes, it's going to be difficult in a different sense of the word. Serrano was power difficult, pressure difficult, southpaw difficult, coming forward, you know, being on, it was A side versus A side. You know, Cameron, on the other hand, she's the B side. whether she likes it or not. She's the champ coming off the biggest win, but she's still the B-side. So she has the hunger of the B-side. She has the power and the boxing ability to make it either a slugfest or go out there and box your ears off. This is going to be a difficult fight for Katie Taylor, especially when she was looking forward to a rematch in another physical fight. Now you're getting an undefeated boxer puncher coming off the best win of her career. That's a tricky slope.
Cameron is definitely a different fighter than Serrano. She fights behind the jab. She throws more conventional punches. She only averages about 53 punches per round, which is like 10 or 12 less per round than Amanda Serrano throws. So I don't think she is the knockout threat or the hurt you threat that Amanda Serrano is, but she is going to be the naturally bigger fighter. Katie Taylor has only fought once at this weight class. There's a reason for that too. So I do think she's dangerous, but you bring up Katie Taylor's footwork. I look at her combinations. I think that's going to make the difference in this fight. The way she flurries, gets in and out and out of danger quickly. I'm not sure Chantel Cameron has the hand speed and is dynamic enough to match that, if that makes any sense. I think she's going to win some rounds because she's very disciplined and has a really good jab, but I don't think she's dynamic enough to do the things that Serrano could do against Katie Taylor. But I'll tell you this, like, you don't want to look past Chantel Cameron at
absolutely
all.
Absolutely not. And I think it's going to be a difficult fight.
It's going to be a difficult
Taylor.
Fight. But if Katie Taylor can win, this is the fight that they're going to do at Three Arena in Dublin. So that's about 12, 13,000 people, I believe. It does set up Serrano Taylor 2
huge
at Croke Park,
huge,
potentially, which is what, 70, 80,000, which is what everybody kind of wants all along. Like, I'm not a conspiracy theorist generally, but I still don't know what the injury was to Amanda Serrano. So
yeah,
Amanda Serrano,
Mr. Reporter, what was the injury and why did they suspend her?
I don't know. Because
you don't get suspended for an injury, Mannix.
I don't know the answer to that. But I'm saying, my point in all this is, you had Amanda Serrano withdrawing, citing an injury that nobody knows about. And then you have Katie Taylor, who doesn't call out anybody, going on social media saying, let's make a fight against Chantel Cameron in Ireland. Three Arena is available. Like, Katie Taylor must know something about Chantel Cameron. She must have seen enough from Chantel Cameron to know that she's got the style that can beat her. You don't think? Like, catch you off guard a little bit to see Katie Taylor on Instagram saying,
no,
I want to fight Chantel Cameron?
No,
she didn't even do that with Serrano.
I just think she didn't want to let an opportunity waste. She doesn't
well,
have
clearly,
time
no.
is not on her side. Katie Taylor's in her mid-30s. Time is not on her side. She's just made the most money she's ever made in her career. She wants to keep the momentum going. The opportunity, the dream opportunity is to fight in her hometown and in an arena with everyone watching.
I agree.
Your biggest, so she's not going to let that slip up waiting for Amanda Serrano
to
clear
her
up.
Fight.
So they're
going to
get her a fight, and they wanted it to be against a legitimate fighter.
But she called out. She didn't say, Eddie, I want to fight on this date. Find me somebody. She said Chantel Cameron. Like, you don't call out somebody unless you're sure that you've got her number. Now, she could be way off. We've seen that happen before. But I think she knows something about how Chantel Cameron
maybe
fights and how she matches up with her. So Cameron first, Croke Park maybe with Serrano. That's quite the year for Katie.
Maybe. But maybe you could just say, well, you just fought Amanda Serrano in the fight of the year, so you could fight King Kong next. It ain't gonna be any different. So whether it's an undefeated fighter like, you know, Chantel Cameron or somebody else after Amanda Serrano, who cares?
I'll tell you this much. I'm not surprised that Serrano withdrew from this fight. Whatever the reason was, that was a physical fight that she fought against Erica Cruz. And we even said it after the broadcast, like, you know, she's got a cut there. She's really going to come back in 2.5 months, 3 months and fight Katie Taylor in the biggest fight of her life. Now, to me, this feels like Amanda Serrano's chance to get a little bit more time, fight her in September on what would be physically anyway more of a level playing field. All right, the heavyweight division. I don't know what's going on right now between Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. To recap what we have seen over the last few days, you had Alexander Usyk's promoter out there saying, we want 50-50 or we'll settle for 60-40, winner gets 60%. You then have Tyson Fury going on Instagram saying, no, you're good for 30%, that's it. And every day that you delay, I take 1% off. Immediately after, you have Alexander Usyk responding again on Instagram saying, all right, I accept 70-30, but I want you to donate $1 million to Ukraine. And every day you don't say yes, I add another million to all that. So you had a pretty interesting back and forth. And then you have the WBA telling reporters that they had been notified that there had been an agreement, that Usyk had accepted 70-30. And then you have Fury and Usyk suddenly now arguing over a rematch clause. And now I don't know where they stand at the moment. So by the time people listen to this podcast, we may have some resolution to it. But do you think there's a possibility this fight could fall apart? Like, I thought 30% was crazy for Usyk to take. Take 30% of the pot was wild, but he did. Now I don't know why Fury isn't quickly locking this down. Like, April 29th is the targeted date. Every day, Sergio, that goes by makes it less likely that we see these two guys fight on April 29th. What is your read on this entire situation?
I love the mind games that Usyk is playing. It goes to show you that...
Belly! Calls him Belly.
I don't know about that. I never even heard him
say that. He calls him Belly. He says, greedy Belly.
That's true, but I love Usyk's mind games. And let me tell you something. I'm sure you heard this before. You know, 30% of something big is better than 100% of nothing. So you got to give credit to Usyk.
That was Fury's argument. Fury says, and it was a good, good statement he made. He said, you take 30% of a fight against me, or you can fight Daniel Dubois, who was the WBA number one contender, for significantly less. So that was a pretty strong point. And that's what got Usyk to come out and say, I accept right away.
And the fact that he believes that he can beat Tyson Fury. But look, he already cleaned out cruiserweight. He already picked up a heavyweight championship strap. He's probably already...
Multiple. He's a unified champion.
He probably already is a Hall of Famer by now. What he's doing inside and outside the ring and for his country is unbelievable. This man's a hero. He's a hero. Alexander Usyk is a bona fide star and a hero, and he doesn't do it for the money. When you ever hear prize fighters saying, well, show me the money, or I don't do it for the money, well, here you have Usyk, a true prize fighter, a true hero, and he's not doing it for the money. He's doing it for the glory. More fighters should take note of this. More champions in his position. He can have the pride of saying, no, I want at least 60-40. No, he's willing to go down 30% because he knows, one, he can beat, he's confident he can beat Tyson Fury. Two, he knows that it's for legacy, it's for history. And three, he's giving Tyson Fury no way out to say no. That is balls, man. That's ballsy by Usyk. It goes to show you that we know that he's willing to fight anyone, anywhere, because his resume proves it. He takes championships from the champion's hometown. One. Two, he'll take less money to do it. Three, he'll do it anywhere against anyone. That's scary, man. So whether you like it or not, that's scary to face. You don't want to face a crazy, talented, experienced, confident guy like that. So Tyson Fury's going to, you know, he's just as crazy and confident as well. But, man, I got to love that strong arm. I love that strong arm.
Fury wants this fight? Because...
No.
You don't think Fury wants this fight?
No. I think he'll do whatever it takes to avoid a fighter like Usyk. If you don't need to fight him, don't fight him. Usyk has
You gotta be the man in the heavyweight division.
He does everything wrong. Usyk does everything wrong for a style like for anybody, actually. You know, he moves like a middleweight, he punches like a light heavyweight. I mean, he moves around.
Fury just got in there for three fights against the biggest puncher in the heavyweight division.
He has footwork, he has defense, and power's not gonna intimidate him. So
you're gonna back down from an Usyk fight even though you step into three fights against Deontay Wilder? Really? I don't see
that's
that.
What footwork and speed does, man. That's what footwork, intelligence, and that southpaw sniper style do to you, man. You rather face a puncher than a moving slick southpaw that can give you headaches.
I will say this, it's definitely weird, like Fury, him saying 70-30, there's no way Fury thought he was going to accept 30%, because if Usyk's promoter was out there saying 50-50, at worst 60-40, Fury coming out saying 30%. There's no way he believed it. No way. But Usyk, to his credit, quickly said, yeah, I'll take that 30%. Now, as we record this, haggling over a rematch clause, it's all kind of bizarre at the moment. I don't think I think ultimately he'll take this fight, but it's definitely weird that he's haggling as much as he is. I don't think he'd be haggling as much. Look at the AJ fight. How quickly did that come together? Like, it didn't happen, but they made what looked like, you know, they made what looked like a deal. Just 6 months ago, AJ decided he's going to go in a different direction to kind of rebuild his career, starting with Jermaine Franklin. But like, Fury has been able to make deals with other promoters, dealing with other networks. This one seems to be dragging out a lot longer than I would have anticipated.
Well, because maybe he doesn't really want to fight him. And that's just, he's putting up a front. is he's
what's he gonna do? Like, is he gonna try to fight Francis Ngannou? Like, probably. Everybody wants a piece of him.
Probably, because everyone, that's easy money.
It is easy.
That's money. Easy money, and we know that Fury's a showman, and he doesn't really do it for the money either. He's already, you know, has made boatload of money. Now he just wants history, which he's done already numerous times. But yeah, he wants attention now. If he can go to Ngannou and make a boatload of money for an easy fight or a defense, I think he'd much rather do that than get a headache like Usyk.
Well, look, he is still Fury, that is, number one at heavyweight. But you can't call yourself the man in the division until you beat the guy with two wins over AJ and three other belts. Like, you can't.
Nah, there's always going to be a challenge. So
nah, but you,
Tyson Fury is the man.
He is the man.
He is
but,
the man.
But you and can't, he can call you can't himself say the definitively man. You're the top heavyweight in this era.
Yeah, you can.
When, no, you can't.
Yes, you can.
You have the undisputed cruiserweight champion who just beat up the guy who at one point was the man before he ran into Tyson Fury or Alexander Usyk, that being Anthony Joshua. Like, you can't.
Tyson Fury's the man. He knocked out Deontay Wilder, who was the man as far as power, as power goes. And Anthony Joshua has already, you know, shown vulnerabilities. He lost to Andy Ruiz. He's been hurt.
That was
before.
His only vulnerability.
He's
though.
Been
he
hurt.
Also knocked
he's been
out
hurt
Klitschko.
Before.
He did a lot of stuff in his career.
I think Tyson Fury is in a better position to negotiate. And that he's
negotiating. You got Usyk saying 30%. I'm cool. Let's do it. Let's have a fight.
He's smart. He's sly. He makes all the decisions. I think he's playing mind games.
It's definitely weird. It's definitely weird.
It's not weird. It's mind games, man. And he's
well,
an
it's weird.
He's an
it's mind games now.
It.
But if the fight doesn't happen, then it becomes really weird.
If it doesn't happen, it's one of many fights that aren't never going to happen because that's just
be
where
dumb.
We're at in
this
boxing.
Would be dumb. When has Usyk not made a fight? He made a he won all four cruiserweight belts. He fought Anthony Joshua. He fought Tony Bellew. He fought Derek Chisora. He'll go anywhere, do anything to make a fight happen.
And you know how scary that is to encounter a man like that. That's willing
believe
to
it.
Fight you anywhere, any place, anytime
for
any money.
Yeah,
come on, man. That's
although
scary.
Let's just say this, Usyk. Made a boatload of money to fight AJ. A boatload. Especially the second time around when they did
well
it.
Well earned. He cleaned out the cruiserweight division. He took the biggest chances. Yeah, that was a well-earned big paycheck.
I agree. All right, last thing I want to talk about. You have this weekend, Gilberto Ramirez returning for his first fight since that title loss against Dimitri Bivol. This is a comeback fight, and it looks like on paper he's taking a comeback opponent. You've got Gabe Rosado, former contender at junior middleweight and middleweight. He has lost three fights in a row, and he's moving up to 175 pounds to challenge Zerto Ramirez. You and I both have a lot of affection for Gabe Rosado. We like the guy a lot. But this feels a little crazy to me, Sergio. Like, I thought Gabe Rosado's career probably should have ended in that last fight against Ali Akhmadov. Instead, he decides to move up in weight and take on a guy who's only been beaten by the very best in the light heavyweight division. Your read on Rosado against Ramirez?
I didn't like it at first, and I still kind of don't like it. I favor Pseudo Ramirez, but, you know, talking to Gabe about this fight, before it even happened, and he was telling me about, you know, this is a possibility, he's very confident because he sparred Pseudo Ramirez plenty of times. And anytime you
does
have...
Does that matter?
Yes,
that,
it does.
It does. Why?
It does. Because you get a gauge for the speed, the power, and how they're going to react when they get hit. You see the look in their eye. You see the hunger. You see the pride. You know, you could have one good day in the gym, and it's not going to be nothing. Two good days. But if you consistently spar and you have success with somebody, even if they're bigger, that gives you confidence. So Rosado has that confidence coming in. They've been in the ring multiple times sparring. And Ramirez is not fleet-footed. He's not fast on the feet. So anytime you're dealing with a fighter like Rosado, where he's been through the mill, he's already been through so many wars, his wear and tear, he's already, you know, 35, 36 years old, so he's near retirement. You don't want a mover. You don't want someone that's going to give you a headache moving. You don't want a slick cutie. You want a guy that's plotting, that comes forward. You know what he's going to do, and that's Pseudo Ramirez. He's a volume puncher. He's flat-footed. He has pop, but he doesn't have speed. So the things that are good, these are things that a veteran can control. What he can't control are footwork, speed, and youth. And I think Ramirez is not bringing that to the table. So it's a calculated risk by Rosado. Do I think he wins? No. Do I think he gets hurt? No. It's going to be another one of these fights where Rosado gives you everything he has, and Ramirez, you know, is going to find a way to win.
I think it's a little bit more lopsided. You got to look at it more lopsided than that, because
do you think Rosado gets stopped?
Rosado, I don't think will ever go down and stay down, but I think somebody would stop it, whether it's a referee.
I asked you if Ramirez Do you think Ramirez stops him?
If I was going to bet on it, but which I don't because we're doing that fight, I would say yes.
I would say no. I think Rosado loses another one-sided fight. He's a journeyman. At this point, he's a journeyman. He knows how to survive. He knows how to slow down the clock.
One thing
you said. He knows how to... Look, anytime you're dealing with a big, long fighter with wide arms, you get on the inside and you tangle up them arms and you push him back knowing that he doesn't have footwork. You can kill the clock.
But that's what Rosado's an expert at. You said the one big thing you said about Ramirez is he has fast hands and he throws a lot of punches, right? Like, so you look at the losses Gabe has had lately. Jaime Munguia.
I never said he had fast hands.
Okay, throws a lot of punches.
A volume puncher, yes.
That's the same thing. Jaime Munguia throws a lot of punches. Lopsided win over Rosado. Ali Akhmadov, last fight, throws a lot of punches. Shutout win over Gabe Rosado. That's the problem here. Gabe's career continued because of the knockout win over Bektimir Melikuziev. Mm-hmm. Bektimir Melikuziev comes at you and loads up. Just loads up. So he opens the door for that shot that Gabe hit him with that knocked him out. The other guys haven't. Like, Munguia didn't. Akhmadov didn't. Shane Mosley Jr. didn't. If you're going to throw a lot of punches at Gabe Rosado, he doesn't have the volume to keep up with you.
No.
He doesn't. Like, his... I think it's his... I forget the number of most recent fights, but it's like he's landed like 11 punches per round. He doesn't land a lot of punches. So I think that's going to be a big problem. That's why I think, you know, maybe Zerto is not the power puncher that his numbers suggest because the competition has been pretty low, especially at light heavyweight. But I think he's going to throw a lot of punches and land a lot of punches to the point where a referee in like the seventh or eighth round might say, you know what, that's enough. Or Freddie Roach in the corner might say, you know what, that's enough. Gabe, at this stage of your career, at this stage of your life, it's not worth it to go out there and keep taking a beating. I mean, look at, I was watching back the Uneski-Gonzalez fight against Zerto, and like, the doctor allowed that fight to continue after the fourth round. That was insane. Like Zerto just lands. He throws that little uppercut that comes with a thumb up there. Like, he has a wide array of punches that he can throw and land efficiently, especially to the body. Like, he is a great body puncher. I have some real concerns that this could get ugly for Gabe Rosado if it goes the wrong way.
It can. I think Rosado has enough tricks up his sleeve to not make it ugly. He knows how to move enough to where a fighter that's flat-footed like Ramirez, and he's not, like I said, he's not fast on his feet. He needs to have that foundation to get that power and that the combinations. The volume comes from the fact that his feet are stationary. Rosado does these little tricky steps where you have to keep refooting yourself. Ramirez is going to always have to keep resetting himself. Kind of like Daniel Jacobs while he was having difficulty landing the power. Rosado's really good at managing the clock, at getting you to step forward. Just when you think he's going to do something, he steps back. Just when you think he's not going to do something, he attacks with one punch and then he smothers his shot. And then he walks you back and kills 10 seconds of the clock. He has excellent time management, man. And that's the reason he's able to do this for so long. With Ramirez, if he has the experience... If Rosales has the experience of being in the ring with Ramirez, so he doesn't have to gauge the power, he's already felt it. He already gauged the speed. He already gauged the
timing.
Do
you really feel somebody's power in sparring versus fighting? Like, if you sparred guys and then fought them, you're like, wow, I didn't see that. I didn't feel
no,
that.
No, you always feel it. You feel the strength. You feel the power. Even if they're not hitting you clean on the chin or in the body, you can feel them ricocheting off your shoulder or off the glove. You know how hard they punch. You don't have to get hit square in the chin to know how hard someone punches. You could feel it off the forearms, off your bicep. You know, when you're blocking them with those 16-ounce gloves, you only imagine, like, man, how about when he puts on boxing gloves, the 10-ounce gloves, he can really crack. But power doesn't intimidate Rosado. Ramirez can bring all the size in the world, the power in the world. That's not going to intimidate him. Older fighters get intimidated by youth, speed, and movement. Ramirez is not bringing that to the table.
Okay, but do you see a way he can win?
Rosado?
Yeah. This is what I'm talking about.
I didn't like, see. Look,
I'm
man,
trying to figure
look,
out.
No,
like you like to say.
But okay, I didn't think he was going to. I didn't give him a chance to beat Melikuziev.
Correct. Nobody did. He was looked at as a name that Melikuziev could add to his resume, and he landed a massive shot, and that kept his career going and earned him some well justified paydays. But in previous fights, you've pointed out that Rosado is willing to lose rounds in order to land one big fight changing shot. Mm-hmm. Maybe he could do that at 160. Maybe he could do that at 168. I don't think he can do it at 175. That is just a weight class too big. He wasn't, outside of the Melikuziev fight, I was looking at his resume. Like, he knocked out Glenn Tapia. Like, everybody was knocking out Glenn Tapia back then. And before that, you have to go back to like 154 to see when Gabe was picking up knockouts. He's not a big puncher. He landed one big shot that put Malakouzyev down, but he's not a typical big puncher. So I don't think he can sit back and wait to land one fight-changing shot, not against a guy like Zerto, who went the distance with Dmitry Bivol, and who took some big shots from Yuneski Gonzalez and was able to keep moving forward against them, too. So I don't think any of these game plans that might rely on a fight-changing shot are going to work.
Rosado is a strong puncher. I've sparred him, you know, a handful of times, and he's rocked me a handful of times, surprisingly, because I felt the same way. I'm like, this guy doesn't punch
hard. Right, but you're a 160.
But I'm just telling you.
This guy's a monster. This guy's going to weigh 200 pounds.
I'm just telling you, Rosado is a very strong puncher. He's strong, all right, and he could hurt you. I don't think he could hurt Ramirez, to the chin at least, but he probably can't hurt him to the body. You never know how a big fighter is going to react once they're fatigued. That's how you beat.
Go to the body.
That's how you beat. That's how you beat tall, big, strong fighters.
I don't disagree with you. Go to the body, but he doesn't go there. You make him miss. The numbers don't lie.
Peck him in the solar plexus. Peck him in the liver. This is, I think, the game plan that Rosado's going to have. Back up a big man that's not accustomed to going backwards, maul him on the inside, you know, hold him and wrestle, and sneaky little body shots on the inside. He's going to have to make it an ugly fight. It's not going to be a punch-for-punch type
but
fight.
But he has been fighting off his back foot a lot in recent fights. He was doing that against Munguia. He was doing that against Akhmadov. He's not pressing 168-pounders forward. Why do we believe he's going to press a 175? Especially a guy that's going to be a cruiserweight on fight night. Like, he's going to be huge.
And that's why he's not this favored to win.
Let me put it this way. This, to me, would be a bigger upset than Malakouzyev.
I don't know, man.
Malakouzyev was untested.
Malakouzyev was not tested as a professional, but, I mean, he was a bronze medalist.
All that stuff.
He was a bronze medalist, big body puncher, knocking out everyone. Power was tested. The power was real.
Zerto just got tested by Bivol, though. Like, Zerto's a tested commodity. Two fights with Jesse Hart, 5 wins at light heavyweight. Like, he is a known commodity here. Last thing for you on Zerto, are you surprised he's here fighting at light heavyweight? I kind of thought he'd move up to cruiserweight after that Bivol fight.
You mentioned this last time. Like, you want him to go to cruiserweight. Who is he going to fight at cruiserweight and why?
We have this conversation.
But he's not suffering.
Jack.
He's not suffering making 175.
I don't know.
He hasn't picked up a strap.
Do you think it's healthy to go up 29 pounds like he did in the Dominic Bosel fight?
He hasn't picked up a strap at 175. So let him.
There's no strap to pick up.
Let him become a champion. How? Or get an opportunity for a championship.
How?
By continuing doing what he's doing. He's already fought 5 guys at light heavyweight. He's 5-0, right?
Okay, what title is he going to get?
Doesn't matter. Well,
there's no titles.
Not right now, but he's going to put himself
Bivol's in the title. Bivol's 2023 is booked.
It doesn't
make
sense.
Better be in 2023.
It doesn't make sense.
Booked.
Cruiserweight doesn't make sense for Ramirez. He's not going to stay there.
It makes sense for Badu Jack.
It's not. Yeah, but Badu Jack's 39 years old, 40 years old. He has to go where the money and the opportunity is.
The money and the opportunity is at cruiserweight right now. You think Badu Jack Ramirez, is Badu Jack versus Ramirez a big fight?
You can't. Big fight, no, but.
Headliner.
But it's a good fight.
Headliner. Yeah, Badu Jack has no promoter. He's out there.
I would love Badu, because Badu Jack is an underrated great fighter. Yeah, because he puts up.
I was incredibly impressed with Badu Jack. Underrated. He's now 3-division world champion. He went up and fought arguably the biggest puncher at cruiserweight.
Underrated great. Even his losses are wins somehow, because he got something off of it. And he's only lost to the best. So underrated great fighter, a great resume that he's putting, and he's a hell of a fighter. I think Badu Jack will be a favorite against Ramirez. Yeah, I would love to see that fight, but it's not a necessary step for Ramirez to go to cruiserweight just to go after Badu Jack and that championship he picked up. Ramirez is a light heavyweight. He's campaigning at light heavyweight. Keep knocking guys out and doing your thing at light heavyweight.
I see no point, though. There's no title to pick up in the next 18 months.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be a title that he has to pick up. He's making a lot of money, and he's headlining. He's becoming a headliner in the Southern California area.
He is a headliner.
They're promoting him perfectly. Golden Boy does a hell of a job promoting their talent, especially in the Mexican populated areas. Continue moving him like the star that he's becoming.
I love that you say Golden Boy does a great job building fighters in Southern California, yet the last time we did this, you were yelling about Edgar Berlanga going to Texas when that guy sells tickets in New York. Your logic is way off on this particular thing. I just think Sergio, and what's Zerto, like 30, 31,
31.
Something like that.
Yeah.
He does have opportunities to get in some significant fights. Maybe you could fight Jaime Munguia. Munguia seems to want to fight at 175 at some point, so that would be a pretty interesting fight.
There you go, but that'll be at 175, not cruiserweight.
But like, you go to cruiserweight and you fight Badu Jack, and Zerto would probably be a favorite in that fight because
Badu Jack is a former 168-pounder, too. Like, he's not a big cruiserweight. Zerto against Badu Jack. You win that strap, all of a sudden, like, you could go to the UK and fight Lawrence Okolie in a big fight. There's money at cruiserweight right now, Sergio. It's not, like, the money at peak light heavyweight, but there's money at cruiserweight.
I would favor Badu Jack in that fight.
Really?
Yes.
He looked great against...
I would favor Badu Jack against Ramirez at cruiserweight. So then it'll be...
That's a great fight.
Yeah, it's a great fight, but it's not a popular fight. It's not a mainstream fight. It's not the fight that Ramirez is looking for.
Headline.
No, it's a big fight for boxing fans, but Ramirez is looking for, he's looking to be the A side. Yeah, he wants to be the next star.
Out there. Who is out? Who would you have him fight? So let's say he wins.
Keep knocking guys out.
He beats Rosado. Who's
next? Keep knocking a guy. Whoever they put in front of you. That's it.
Then we go back down that path of Dominic Bozal and, you know, the guys he had to fight, Yunesky Gonzalez.
Do people come and watch Sudo Ramirez fight?
Yes, but those fights are pointless.
People come and watch.
Actually, I take it back because they weren't pointless because the WBA made him fight those guys.
Listen,
so they weren't pointless.
They show up. The fans show up. They love him. He gets the knockouts. He moves on. He's becoming a star. Even though he's 31 and a former champion and undefeated still, he's still being marketed and pushed the right direction. He's a good-looking, a volume puncher that knocks guys out. What's not to like? Keep doing your thing, Golden Boy. I think they know what they're doing. They don't need to put him and rush him into, you know, a championship fight again.
Don't rush him into a championship fight.
Not if it's not there.
He wants to win titles. He said that. He wants to become a two-division world champion. What's the fastest path to that? It's Badu Jack.
I like the Badu Jack fight. I like the Badu Jack fight, yes, but I just don't see him campaigning at cruiserweight.
The only problem that I can see with going to cruiserweight is that you don't come back down.
Exactly. Like, so I don't like him going to cruiserweight.
It's not like going from super middleweight to light heavyweight.
Only thing. Would I love the fight with Badu Jack? Yes. I would even favor Badu Jack in that fight, but once you go up in weight, you get lazy, and I just don't see any future for Sudo Ramirez at cruiserweight.
No, agree to disagree on that one. We'll see what Zerto decides after this fight against Gabe Rosado. Do you want a sign for your house?
It looks like a strip club sign. Look, anybody that watches this show, watch it on YouTube, and you're gonna see the neon sign that says Boxing with Chris Mannix, and it looks like a cheesy strip club sign in East LA.
And when we come back, my conversation with Gabe Rosado.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step, and you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gabe Rosado is back.
Yeah, man.
It's like, I feel like I've had some version of this podcast with you saying those exact same words. But I've been doing this podcast like 7 years, probably. Certainly since I knew you back in the NBC Sports days when you were, you weren't even back then. You were coming up back then, yeah, in that 154 pound. But like, you know, you take a fight, a tough fight, you lose, and then you're back yeah, again. This time you're back on Saturday. Gilberto Ramirez, your first fight at 175, yeah, live on DAZN. I will say this. I was surprised when you told me you were taking this fight.
Yeah.
Like, your last fight against Ali Akhmadov, you know, you didn't get beat up, but yeah, you got beat pretty clean,
yeah,
by Akhmadov. That felt like the end for you at that point. Instead, you're going up in weight. You're challenging a guy that's only been beaten by the very best. Tell me why you want this fight.
Yeah, you know, this fight, it's just one of those fights that I'm going to get up for. You know, I'm going to be motivated for. You know, and I know Ramirez. We've done a few camps together. And I know what he brings to the table, man. It's definitely not an easy fight at all. But, you know, just moving up in weight, not having to cut, I feel stronger. And, you know, he's a big guy, but he's not a big puncher. You know, so I feel real good going into this fight, man.
So, immediately after the loss to Akhmadov, what were you feeling in that moment? What were the days and weeks like after that fight?
Yeah, I was, you know, that fight was pretty disappointing just because I tried something new. You know, I went to Puerto Rico, switched up the team. You know, I had to talk with Freddie, like, you know, I'm going to go to Puerto Rico and, you know, just work with a different coach. And it didn't work out, man. It didn't work out. You know, as a matter of fact, the team from Puerto Rico didn't even come out with me. You know, because
no, you picked up Freddie along the way,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, you know, like, I think it was a week to the fight. I called Freddie and I was like, "Yo, I need you. I need you in my corner." And he was like, "All right, let's go." You know, because it was nothing personal. You know, it was just I just needed to get away. But it was a bad move. You know, and camp wasn't the best camp. It didn't have the best sparring. You know, and the team in Puerto Rico just kind of, it was like there was a lot of friction going on in the camp. And it was just crazy, man, where I was like, you know, this is going to be bad in the corner, so I'm going to need Freddie. So I called Freddie the week of, and he was like, "I got you." And, you know, I felt good, you know, having him in my corner, but, you know, you're as good as your camp. And, you know, I have to be honest with myself. I really didn't – I tried to put my best effort in, but, you know, it just didn't work out with the team.
How much thought after that last fight did you give to retirement?
Yeah, man.
Doesn't sound like a lot.
You know, I think what I needed was just like a break, man. You know, honestly, if you think about it, right, like, it's been pretty busy, you know, with Jacobs and then Bekdemir and then Munguia. Those are big fights, and they're grueling camps, man, and the fights are tough, you know. So it's like I needed a break, man. I think I just needed a break. I think I was worn out, and I think you can see it in my last two performances. You can see that I was worn out. And I watched the fights. I'm like, shit, you know, I look pretty slow. I don't look into it, you know. So I think I just need to kind of reset and just focus. You know, boxing, yeah, it's, you know, obviously it's your ability, but the mental part of it is like the most. It means more than anything. If mentally you're not there, man, you're not going to perform.
So you get a phone call at some point about fighting Gilberto Ramirez.
Yeah.
What's your reaction to that?
You know, I liked it. You know, it was Robert Diaz called me. I was in Puerto Rico, and we spoke about it back in December. And he was like, look, after the holidays, let me see what's going on. I'll talk to his team and we'll see what's up. And I just waited it out and gave me a call like in January and we made it happen. But I love the fight just because it's a big fight. It's a meaningful fight. And I think it's just going to be one of the – I think it'd be a candidate for the fight of the year, you know, because Zuldo's going to – he's going to bring it. I'm going to bring it. So it's going to be action-packing. It's in L.A.
Was that call from Robert Diaz to fight Zuldo the first call you'd received about fighting it? You had some other promoters kind of reaching out at that point?
No, I had a couple options. You know, I had a couple options. Matchroom called me for some fights. There were fights, Russia. I was like, oh damn, that's a long flight.
Who did Matchroom want you to fight?
Man,
Pacheco.
No, not Pacheco. And Pacheco is my boy. I don't even think I would fight Pacheco. You know, because Pacheco's coming up.
Yeah,
and he's a kid that I've watched come up, and I've helped him a lot, and I've always so I look at him like a little bro. Where I want nothing but the best for him. So we're like in different paths in our career. So for me to fight
he's still
him.
Still like 20, 21?
Yeah, man. He's a good fighter, though. He's a real good kid, man. And he's getting better, man. So I just want to see him. I just want to see Pacheco in the future, you know, run a division, man. So I wouldn't want to fight him just on that. I'm just knowing him and just, you know, really liking the kid.
So you know who was it with Matchroom?
I don't remember, man. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I don't remember.
So, but Zerto's a big guy. I mean, he's probably going to weigh cruiserweight limit come fight night. You hear that? I know you've sparred with him before. Yeah. So I guess tell me about that. He was helping you prepare to fight Bektimir Melikuziev.
Yeah.
What do you remember from that sparring?
No, you know, the sparring is always competitive. You know, it's like a high-level chess match. It's, you know, we're both in there thinking, but, you know, we're both pulling the trigger, and it's like, you know, it's intense. You know, and he got me ready for that fight and just that size. You know, when I went into the Beck fight, I was confident just because, you know, I was used to sparring bigger guys, you know, and for this fight, I've been sparring cruiserweights, guys 200 plus, 215 pounds, 220 pounds, you know, and I carry it well. So and at the same time, I think it benefits me in a way where you fight guys at 60 and 68, the speed is different. Where Zuldo, you know, even though he's a bigger man, but, you know, the shots are coming a lot slower than guys at middleweight and 68, man. So I think it gives me an advantage to make them pay.
Sergio likes to tell me that in sparring, you get a feel for the power of a guy.
Yeah.
How he feels. Do you feel like you have a grasp on how strong Ramirez is?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I think as well it was like going into a fight, it's a mindset as far as the ability to take a punch. You know, I think, you know, when guys go into a fight so caught up in like someone's power, they could get psyched out, and when they get touched, it's like, oh shit, it's real. You know what I mean? Where you kind of I kind of taught myself to go into fights where I really don't care how hard a guy punches. Like it's not like a thing for me. You know, I think when you don't respect a guy's power is when you can get hurt. And here's the funny thing. Mosley, I totally had no respect for Mosley. And I'm a veteran, I should know better than that. But going into that fight, I didn't think much of his power. I didn't think much of speed. I didn't think much of anything. And when he touched me, I was like, damn, he got a little pop. But he got a little pop because it was a surprise to me, because I didn't go into that fight mentally prepared for that. So, you know, you have to go into a fight thinking anyone can punch and just, you know, be like, it is what it is. You know,
you're back with Freddie for this fight, full 2 month training camp for this fight. Most success you've had the last few years has been working with Freddie.
Yeah.
Close fight with Jacobs. You knock out Melikuziev. Good fight against Jaime Munguia. How has that helped you in your preparation? How different do you feel going into this fight than the last one?
Well, being that this is, I think, my fifth fight with Freddie, the camps and where we've it's been tough and rough, and like Freddie, like, you know, he's like, he doesn't play that shit, bro. You know what I'm saying? But Freddie's like this: if you bullshit, he's not gonna give you the time. He's gonna be there and he's gonna do his job, but he's not going to hold your hand. And I'm saying Freddie's going to give you what you give him. So when he sees that you're really into it, man, he's like, he's locked in. So I know what it is to be in a camp with Freddie where he's locked in with me. That's obviously, you know, going into the Jacobs fight, the Beck fight, and the Munguia, right? So that's the vibe we on right now. He's really happy with camp. He's really happy with what I've been giving him. I'm happy with camp as well and everything. So mentally, I think I'm in a much, much better place.
You've obviously coming into this fight with a game plan. You're a smart fighter. Freddie's a smart trainer. Obviously, you don't want to reveal your game plan to an audience. But I look at this fight. It's tough to knock out or hurt a guy as big as Zerto, who's gone 12 with Bivol, 12 with a lot of big punchers, knocked out Yanezky Gonzalez at light heavyweight. He throws a lot of punches, too.
Yeah.
Statistically more punches than you do. Like, what is kind of your lane here? Like, well, how do you need this fight to go?
You know, I have to go into this fight and let my hands go. I got to let my hands go. You know, I know it's not a fight where I'm going to go in there and just kind of pick my shots and stuff. It's, I have to go in there. I have to let my hands go. I have to work the body. You know, Zulu has a good chin. But one thing Bivol didn't do is Bivol really didn't touch the body much. You know, Bivol is more of a stand-up fighter, and he's more with the jab, the 1-2, the hook. But he wasn't really touching the body. Where I felt if he would have touched the body, he probably would have hurt Zulu a lot. But, you know, it's just staying busy, you know. And I realized that this is it. Like, for real, this is it. So it's like, I have to give it my all. I have to give it my all, and I'm willing mentally to give it my all, you know.
I think you're right, too, about letting your hands go. Not just for you, but for fighters against Zerto. You know, I've called all his fights at light heavyweight, and, you know, Gonzalez had some success early when he let his hands go.
Yeah.
Bivol, the threat of him letting his hands go, and when he did let his hands go, he had Zerto backing up a lot, and Zerto doesn't fight well off the back foot.
Yeah.
He fights really well coming forward when he can be patient, deliberate, go to the body, excellent body puncher. That's probably going to be a pretty telltale sign early. If you're letting your hands go, you give yourself a shot. If not, he's the kind of fighter that's shown he can pick people apart.
Yeah, you got to let your hands go because you got to break his rhythm. He's a rhythm fighter. So he lets his hands go, but he doesn't let his hands go recklessly. He picks his shots. So he throws the 1-2, the 1-2-3 to the body, the 1-2. He tries to counter with the left hook to the body. So he's really technical. He's not a guy that he's just gonna go in there and just just start swinging just to swing. So I feel like you have to break his rhythm, and you have to like stop him from thinking about what he wants to throw, and you know, catch him maybe, you know, making a mistake. You know, maybe he might want to exchange with you in the middle of that. In the middle of an exchange, you can catch him with something. So I feel like, you know, that's really it. It's just, you have to stay busy. And, you know, we trained hard to be in that kind of condition where we can let our hands go for 12 rounds, if so be. So, you know, that's the mindset.
Would this be a bigger upset than your win over Melikuziev?
I think so, man. You know, and one thing I saw, you know, what's his name? Marvelous Marvin Hagler, the legend. It was his death was yesterday's anniversary, right?
So, oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. He passed on the 13th of March. And one thing that he said that motivated him was the media and the public. Like, no one gave him credit, you know? And I saw that and I was like, man, it kind of hit, because I was like, man, that's so true. You know, sometimes you don't get the credit. And it was like, you know what? I have to do this. Like, I have to do this. Like, you know, my career has been ups and downs, but this win right here is everything. You know what I'm saying? This win right here is everything, man. I think this win is probably bigger than the championship, because it's like I'm the dog going into this fight, you know? And people love the fight because it's Gabe Rosado, and they know what Gabe Rosado brings to the table, but it's like, I want to do more than that. I want to win the fight. You know what I mean? And I think winning the fight is just going to be huge.
Well, you've never shied away from competition. That's something that will be etched on your boxing tombstone, whenever that may come. Hopefully, Gabe, hopefully we're coming up a win next time,
for
and
sure.
We're talking, because, I mean, as soon as that win over Melikuziev happened, I mean, Munguia in the ring was calling you out. It took like half an hour to call you out. Like, do you, This is your first training camp at 175. Do you notice the difference in any of that? Obviously, you can eat a little bit more. You can be a little bit, you don't have to worry about that 168 cut, yeah. But do you feel different?
I feel the difference in energy. You know what I mean? The energy is a lot better because, you know, just because I made 68 doesn't mean it was easy. You know, I'm a big guy. I walk around in the high 80s. I go up to 190. So that cut for 68 is rough. And, you know, I think, you know, I'm not a young kid, right? as far as boxing.
Correct, yeah.
Right? And it's like when you have to make that cut, fight week is rough. It's rough on your body. And, you know, this is my 17th year as a pro. To ever do that cut, man, it's just like it's exhausting, bro. And I know it definitely takes a toll. So being able to just kind of just have my meals, you know, I'm not eating crazy right now because it's fight week, so I still have to cut a bit. But it's, you know, I feel a lot healthier. My energy's better, and just my energy, my vibe. You know what I mean?
We're gonna call this Gabe Rosado's last stand. You okay with that? You cool with that?
You know what, man? I don't think it'd be my last because, you know, I'm going in this fight to win, man. So,
well, last stand in the sense, like, this is
okay.
Win or go home. Oh, yeah, this is Gabe Rosado making his last stand to prove he belongs at this level.
For sure. Definitely, man. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing, man. You know, I feel like my career is unique, you know, and I feel like it's a career where I think people are so intrigued because, you know, for the most part, people won't give a shit. That guy has, 16 losses? Like, what? Mm-hmm. Why are we wasting our time? That's the mindset for most people. But I think people are intrigued because it's like, I do put on good performances. And it's like, I'm kind of inconsistent, mm-hmm. but it's like, man, he's like right there, mm-hmm. right? And I think people are kind of like rooting for me.
I absolutely agree yeah. with that.
And I take it serious because I know how, what it can mean as far as like, even if I could inspire that one kid, you know what I'm saying? That one kid that probably doubts himself and he's like, damn, man, Gabe did it, you know? So it's not just about me, man. It's like, you know, I want people to feel good and be like, damn, he didn't let the media or anyone put him down. Like he worked hard and he did it. So, you know,
you're just an inspiration to all, especially young kids that might have one loss, two losses, say, oh, my career's over.
Yeah.
You're in main events time after time. You've been in more marquee fights, main event type fights than 90% of the boxers that are out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's crazy. Since the NBC days.
Since the NBC days when you were a younger version of yourself. Still look like a younger version, man. You're in all these wars, you still can pull it off, pull the look off.
Thank God. Thank God, man. But I feel great, man. And I'm happy. And like I said, man, I'm really in a good mind space, man. So I think that's most important. And I'm going to have fun, man. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have fun. This is a fun event. You know, my family's coming out. It's going to be crazy. And I'm excited. I'm enjoying it.
Awesome. Well, good luck, Gabe. Gabe Rosado, Saturday against Gilberto Ramirez. Looking forward to seeing you there, man.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
All right, NBA fans, get off the bench and bet the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Because right now, FanDuel is giving new customers 10 times your first bet in bonus bets. It doesn't matter if your first bet is an airball, you'll still get up to $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. I have been betting regularly on the Los Angeles Lakers of late, and they have been paying off because even without LeBron James, they have been playing winning basketball. I'm going to keep doing it throughout the course of this regular season. With FanDuel, you can bet on everything from the money line to point spreads to which player will score first, all on a top-rated sportsbook app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. And FanDuel is now live in Massachusetts, my home state, my hometown of Boston. Download the app now and take advantage of their great special offers, boosts, and more. Just visit FanDuel.com/boxing to get in on the action. That's FanDuel.com/boxing. 21 plus in select states. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit required. Refund issued as a non-withdrawable bonus bets that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas City Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY
467-369-NY. Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-800-789-7777, or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700, or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit www.mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming, or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Time now for this week's picks, brought to you by FanDuel. Tough week for the kid last week. Tough week. I was all in, man, on Tony Harrison. All in on Tony Harrison. Bet a bunch of times on Tony Harrison. Told you to bet when it was plus 350 by decision. By fight night, it was plus 460 by decision. I went even further in. Didn't work out. Tony Harrison got knocked out by Tim Zhu. Hey, that happens sometimes. I still love the odds. I'd probably do it all over again because Tony Harrison, I think there should have been something there in him. He just didn't have it anymore. Sometimes that happens to fighters when they get to a certain age and they get knocked out a certain amount of times. Anyway, not a lot happening in terms of high value in the gambling space this weekend. But if you're looking at the fight this weekend on DAZN, Gilberto Ramirez, Gabriel Rosado, heavy odds right now in favor of Ramirez, but I think they're pretty safe. I mean, Ramirez is a former 168-pound champion whose only loss to this point came to Dmitry Bivol, a top 10 pound-for-pound talent. He's coming in with something to prove coming off that loss. Gabe Rosado, veteran fighter, cagey fighter, experienced fighter, but he's coming off three straight losses. He's lost four of his last five. He's moving to a new weight class. I give him minimal chance to win, to say the least. If you want to make a little more money, go with the stoppage in this one. Rosado's tough. Don't get me wrong. He doesn't get one punch knocked out a lot, but at this weight class against a guy with this kind of hand speed, I would take Ramirez to win by stoppage. I don't think he gets it with one punch, but I think he throws enough punches where the referee or the corner steps in and saves Gabe Rosado for himself. So this week, take Gilberto Ramirez to win. Take him to win by stoppage. Those are my picks, brought to you by FanDuel. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Sergio Mora and Gabe Rosado for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.